fuller position above that. Drivers and gunner's stations to four. Small fold-out seats and rugged controls. His and Schallenbohr's sponson stations set a little way back and to either side, each equipped with external vid links and remote controls that let them sight, traverse, and fire their weapons. Ammunition storage, air exchanger shrines, and of course the main power plant taking up the back third of the tank's interior. Stowage boxes, rebreather rack, emergency medicay shrine, arms locker, and other minor necessities wherever they fitted. They had a little more space to move than some crews, as the Agamemnon pattern dispensed with an ammunition carousel in favour of manual loading by chainsling and main force. Or in their case, Vero thought proudly, by Muretzin. She was crouched by the ammunition, muttering perfunctory prayers as she checked over the demolisher shells and made notes on a data slate. Schallenbohr was folded into her seat and testing her controls. Treve sat at his driver's station and frowned intently as he fiddled with the settings for the internal vox, his rancor set aside for now. Vero didn't suppose he would ever bring himself to like the Brethian, but at least the man knew his business. Vero had just finished stowing the commander's belongings and was beginning his own checks and prayers when the sergeant leaned down through the turret hatch.
"Best give everything a second check, ladies and gentlemen," he said. "We've got half a dozen field engineers and a pair of Ogryns out here with orders to break down our redoubt. I think we all know what that means."
Vero felt his heart beat faster. He exchanged a look with Schallenbohr, saw his excitement and trepidation mirrored there. The sergeant lowered himself into the gunner's seat and set to his own checks. As he did so, Vero heard him muttering,
"Not even a Cadian at the helm. Never even set foot on the training fields."
"She's our commander all the same, sir."
Vero knew he risked the sergeant's ire, but he couldn't help himself.
"Not till she earns it, yeah?" said Schallenbohr.
For his part, Vaslav cast a dark look at the two of them, then bent to the task of checking his controls. Muretzin hadn't looked up during the exchange, carrying on with her tasks as though she hadn't heard. Treve wore a small but unpleasant sneer. Vero sighed. If the redoubt was coming down, then they would be going into battle soon enough. For better or worse, Hedaya Edsel would be their commander, providing, of course, that she got back from Mandraiga Command before the order to advance came down the line. He'd have bet a canteen of good Uruxi vintage that the sergeant was hoping she wouldn't. Vero doubted the armoured company would leave without their new officers, however.
"Emperor, let her be up to this," he breathed.
The truth was, Garrett Vero had no control over matters either way. Such was life in the Astra Militarum. All he could do was see the purity and well-being of his own systems, serve as a Cadian should, and beseech the Emperor that all would work out. He applied himself to his awakening rituals and system checks. As he did so, quietly and privately, he continued to pray. Chapter 3. Orders. Edsel disembarked the Torux into the tightly controlled whirlwind of industry that was Mandraiga Command. She stepped down onto a ferrocrete square at least a mile across, surrounded by towering structures resembling man-made mountains. Behind her came a handful of other mid-ranking officers, rounded up from her part of the line. It would be quite the time for the enemy to attack, while all the officers were parading about back here. But then again, the Mandraiga line had held for many months and the defenders were well entrenched. If an assault did come, they could no doubt hold long enough for the command staff to get back into position. Still, this was a risk that would have been considered. Evidently, this meeting was important enough to merit pulling all the officers off the line at once. Edsel wished she could discuss her thoughts with someone, but though she stood amidst a great mass of humanity, she found herself alone. The only face she'd recognized aboard the Torox had been the Geskan officer who'd spoiled for a fight with Adept Umbolt. She'd managed to drag from him that he was called Graves, and that he held the rank of Bast Gan,
which was the Gascon equivalent of lieutenant or possibly platoon leader. He'd been monosyllabic, however, and Etzel had taken the hint. Fatigue dragged at her. The ache of back-and-forth transit felt like a hangover. Etzel had always found waiting to fight far more tiring than battle itself. She had never been sanguine when it came to uncertainties or delays. At least in battle you knew where you stood. "Live what is," she told herself, another of her mother's sayings. The aide stepped down from the Torox's cab.
"If you will follow me," she said, striking out across the grey expanse.
Etzel and her companions followed. The buildings around them had once formed part of an industrial complex. The cog and the skull of the Adeptus Mechanicus was much in evidence. The Cadians had transformed them, however. Each one had been shored up and fortified. Gun turrets and stab lights pointed skyward from battlemented roofs. Slabs of armour had been bolted to the structures doughty enough to support them, while heaps of rubble showed where ailing buildings had been simply bulldozed. In their place rose prefabricated bastions emblazoned with imperial aquilas. Etzel saw soldiers and menials swarming around them. Something had evidently dropped a stone into the pool. She wondered what. The plaza bustled. Her group threaded between neat stacks of munitions and fuel, sandbagged bunkers and tents whose guy ropes stretched to holes cut directly into the ferrocrete. Columns of soldiers jogged past with lasguns shouldered. Robed officials swayed above the tumult on servo lifters. Sentinel walkers stalked here and there, the pilots manipulating their cargo grapples to hoist laden metal pallets. Elsewhere, Etzel made out the ugly augmetics of a servitor. It lumbered closer, dragging a fuel pipe towards a Valkyrie gunship, waiting on an improvised landing pad. There were others, too, aiding robed engineers with repairs. Etzel did her best to ignore the pallid flesh and glassy eyes. Servitors were rare on her homeworld, since the salt air degraded them too quickly. She hadn't seen the creatures up close until she had joined the Imperial Guard, and had never really got used to them. Looking away from the mindless cyborgs, she found herself instead a witness to true death. They were approaching one of the huge structures now, a heavily armoured shrineplex. Nearby, a commissar stood to attention. Beside her was a rank of Cadians with lasguns aimed. Backs to the shrineplex wall stood a miserable gaggle of blindfolded soldiers awaiting the Emperor's mercy.
"And for the charges of dereliction of duty and misappropriation of the blessed arms and armour which the God Emperor has seen fit to bestow upon you and—"
The commissar's voice, amplified through a vox speaker, rang over the hubbub. Yet even she was drowned out as a wing of marauder bombers thundered overhead. Etzel glanced up at the massive aircraft. She looked back down in time to see another huge servitor about to trample her. She leapt back, throwing out an arm to pull the aide back with her. The hulking cyborg thundered ponderously on, passing so close that Etzel was bathed in its unguent reek. The servitor was a walking mound of muscle and servo-driven plasteel, its head jutting low between huge shoulders and hidden by a crimson hood. More red cloth draped its bulk and trailed the ground behind it, bells jingling on wire tassels. Behind the servitor came a procession of tech priests. Etzel saw glowing eye lenses, rubberized robes the colour of blood and mechanical tendrils. They were blaring Binharic prayers over the engines of the vehicles rumbling in their wake. She gazed at the massive rocket racks of Manticore artillery tanks, then gaped as she saw the still more ominous shape of a Deathstrike missile launcher bringing up the rear. A single enormous missile occupied the tank's launch cradle. She imagined the carnage such a weapon could wreak amongst the foe.
"You might look where you're going. Throw knows you've enough eye lenses under those hoods," shouted the aide.
One of the priests halted and leant on his cog-toothed axe. His face was a metal half-mask. His eyes glowed green.
"Factual. You were distracted by the proximity of combat aircraft
and were thus the careless parties in this exchange. Advisory. Exercise augmented caution as you traverse this staging area. Additional. My procession accompanies the divine ordnance furnished as gifts by the Omnisire for the defence of this location, and will brook no interruption to our sacred duties. With that, the tech priest turned away.
Your name, priest? The aide barked after him. I shall be reporting your carelessness to my superiors.
Magos facilem apertus heng. The priest's reply floated back over his shoulder.
Permissive. Engage in whatever emotionally compensatory acts of petulance will bring you optimized emotional equilibrium.
Etzel exchanged a look with the scowling aide. Behind her, Bast Gan Graves spat again. As the last artillery tank passed, the commissar was revealed, marching away through the crowds with her execution detail on her heels. In their wake, servitors heaped bodies for disposal and mopped up blood. Etzel shuddered as she imagined different faces beneath those pitiful blindfolds. She wouldn't let it come to that, not while she was their commander.
What is all this for? Etzel asked.
I haven't seen this much activity in one place since the muster at Wormwerk.
You'll have to wait for the briefing, Lieutenant, snapped the aide. I don't know how it's done in other regiments, but Cadian's standby protocol.
She set off again. Etzel winced and followed. She was neither a sergeant nor a Sagoan any more. She couldn't allow herself these slips. The aide led them below a gothic arch bristling with candles and censers. Banners hung above it, regimental standards surrounding the colours of the 9th Army Group. Elite Kazrakin flanked the door, helm visors glinting, hotshot lasguns cradled across their chests. The shrineplex had the chill and gloom of a holy place, but its sepulchral sobriety did little to curtail the industrious bustle. Soldiers, aides, and robed adepts were everywhere, exuding purpose and energy. Through one stone archway, Etzel saw a chamber filled with cogitators and their operators. Another housed arrays of massive voxets, Cadians hunched before them scribbling notations and transmitting messages. Serfs in 9th Group tabards hastened past bearing trays of food and drink, or armfuls of data slates. Munitorum adepts, many accompanied by honour guards, shoved importantly through the press. Etzel saw more groups of field officers like her own, all hastening deeper into the building. Another huge arch swept overhead, and they emerged into a flagstoned corridor that stretched away to right and left. Its high ceiling was vaulted and decorated with frescoes. One wall was dominated by stained glass windows, whose grandeur was only slightly dimmed by the flakboard panels bonded over them from outside. The crush of humanity was even greater here. Tired as she was, the noise and jostle and smell of unwashed bodies threatened to overwhelm Etzel. She wasn't helped by a corpulent priest who hovered low above the crowd in a suspenser pulpit, bellowing fire and brimstone through vox speakers. The man thrummed low over Etzel's head, causing her and those around her to duck.
And in that time did those who were faithful to the God Emperor welcome the coming of the holy fires. For though they burned their flesh, so too did they grant righteous immolation unto the heretics who, in their wickedness, opposed his divine will. And amongst the unbelievers was the burning worst. And so the faithful did raise up their scalded hands in praise to the divine God Emperor, and they did offer him great thanks for his gift of pain that in their...
Straightening up, Etzel couldn't help scowling after the priest, tiredness and irritation taking momentary possession of her while the human tide resumed its flow. She gave a sudden start, then groaned as she turned to see her group were lost amidst the crowd. Etzel craned her neck, trying to see over the mass of people. It was all she could do not to be swept away.
Throne sakes! She cursed.
Unfamiliar faces whirled about her. voices blended in a dull roar. Etzel entertained a momentary wish the flying priest would come back her way, so that she could introduce him to a gift of pain. Then, a flash of recognition amongst the crowd. Etzel lunged through a gap, sidestepped an indignant adept, and grabbed the man's arm. He spun in surprise, then beamed with recognition.
"Lieutenant Aswald," she said.
"Lieutenant Etzel. Did you find your tank?" he asked.
"Eventually, just in time to get dragged back here and lose my group instead."
"Come with us then, Lieutenant," said Aswald, pointing with his chin at another aide hovering nearby.
"Your 11th company also, yes?"
Etzel forced her tired mind to recall the briefing details from her data slate.
"Throne, yes, of course. Idiot."
He raised an eyebrow.
"Me, not you," she clarified.
"Not at all," replied Aswald, his smile infuriatingly reassuring. Etzel joined Aswald's group as they turned right down the corridor. She noticed more tanker uniforms amongst this group. She wondered how many of her new regiment had just heard her admit to getting lost. There were more than enough violet eyes amongst them. Etzel held herself erect and ignored their glances, instead looking Aswald up and down.
"Cadian fatigues at last, I see," she said. "One must embrace change or lie broken in its wake."
He smiled.
"Speaking of which, how many of your new crew already lie broken in yours?"
"Less than they deserve," she replied.
"I take it they've a reputation?"
"Oh, nothing my lot have said out loud. But the Emperor speaks in the silences people leave."
They passed through a cloud of incense that left everyone choking. When she could breathe again, Etzel asked after Aswald's own crew.
"I'm embarrassed to admit they seem the picture of Cadian excellence. From the few minutes I was permitted amongst them," he said, "I feel that I must impress them, rather than the other way round."
"I know what you mean, my lot notwithstanding."
He shot her a searching look, then made a small, ah, sound of understanding. "You will find the commander's seat becomes more comfortable by the day, and we will both earn the mantle of Cadian soon enough," he said, low enough that only Etzel could hear.
"I'm sure," she replied, arching an eyebrow.
Aswald grimaced, registering his own patronizing tone. She sighed and slapped him on the shoulder.
"I don't need a mentor, Lieutenant," she said, striving for a more friendlier tone. "I just need some sleep, and for my crew to stow their gear, and to stop feeling like a passenger in my own life.
Emperor's grace, I just need to kill some heretics."
They passed beneath another archway, graven with stylized warriors of the Adeptus Astartes that stood 30 feet tall. Beyond them was a broad cloister that had been transformed into a chamber by the addition of an armoured roof and plasteel support columns. Once, Etzel noted, plants had grown here. Now the grasses and flower beds were all trampled, and the trees were withering for want of natural light. The contrast with Croatoa's rampant jungles was stark. At the cloister's heart, an auto pulpit had been erected. Atop it hunched a Mechanicus Adept. His face was a cluster of swiveling eye lenses. A forest of servo arms emerged from his back, each tipped with quills or manipulator claws. He was flanked by a pair of lesser adepts, bearing hoppers of folded parchment on their backs. This spooled over their shoulders and through the elaborate quill mechanisms that replaced their lower jaws, which printed endless reams of script. As the parchment piled at his feet, so the spider-like adept gathered it up with inhuman speed and studied the words before tapping at an oversized data slate. The entire process resulted in the updating of an ornate vidscreen erected before the pulpit. It was here that the aides led their groups, gathering in a press before the screen. As Etzel joined them, she saw the signifiers of regiments, companies and platoons flickering over the display.
"There we are," said Aswald.
"Briefing chamber, corridor 41, second corridor left, third door right, 11th company briefing with Captain Brezhik,"
Etzel read aloud from the screen. She remembered his name from her slate and wondered again what sort of commanding officer she served. They saluted their aide, who returned the gesture, then vanished into the crowd.
"On our own from here, then," said Aswald, scanning the cloister's edge.
Etzel saw dozens of corridors leading off from it. Above each, numbers had been seared into the stone. "Corridor 41, said Etzel, pointing. They set off through the crush, doing their bit to trample what remained of the pallid grass. Other tankers came with them, evidently destined for the same briefing. She heard Aswald introducing himself and caught a few names in return. Amelia Askarov of Brigand, Daisuke Karch of Orc Grinder, Fitz Lothan of Paragon's Pride, Olga Jorgens of Ogre. Jorgens was a compact man with a smile as firm as his handshake.
"Welcome to the Hammers," he said. "I trust you've received the proper welcome."
"Cordial and efficient," replied Aswald with a genial smile. Etzel grimaced vaguely. Pleasantries could wait, she thought. First, she wanted to get back to her tank and get her crew in order.
"They might be polite on the parade ground, but they're killers in all the field," commented First Lieutenant Askarov.
She was slight and spare, Cadian pale, and with the insignia of First Tank, 4th Squadron on her shoulder. She had a fierce grin that Etzel warmed to at once. By the time they found their briefing chamber, Etzel was thoroughly sick of ecclesiarchal decoration. The space boasted the seemingly obligatory tapestries, candles, choral balconies, and stifling censers. She ignored it all, focusing on the hollow table that had been installed at the chamber's centre. A space had been cleared around it, and fold-out canvas chairs set in rows there. Many were already occupied by people in uniforms of Cadian tank commanders. By the table stood a figure Etzel recognised. Her heart sank. Captain Brezhik's glance was no less dismissive now than it had been on the Valkyrie flight however many hours before. Etzel hastened to her seat. As she and the others settled themselves, Brezhik gestured to a muscular man lingering at the door.
"First Sergeant Moss, if you would," said Brezhik. Moss swung the door shut with a hollow boom, then moved amongst them with an armful of data parchments.
While the sergeant distributed these, Brezhik started speaking.
"Ladies and gentlemen, you have been briefed regarding your transfer, but for the newcomers I will reiterate. You are now property of 11th Company of the 49th Cadian Armoured Regiment. You are Hammers. You will live up to your name. For clarity, donning a Cadian uniform does not make you Cadian. Those of you who do not yet know what does make you Cadian, learn quickly. Inferiority of origin will not be accepted as an excuse for poor conduct."
Etzel kept a scowl off her face with a conscious effort.
"I am Captain Brezhik. I command 11 Co. And as far as you are concerned, I speak with the authority of the God Emperor himself. Clear?"
"Yes, sir,"
they barked. Moss, passing, pressed a data parchment into Etzel's hands. She glanced up at him, but his violet eyes had already moved on. Brezhik's gaze raked them like a stab light.
"You will note the non-standard squadron size. The company will be operating 4 squadrons, increased to 4 tanks apiece. This ratio is to counteract the diluting effect of consolidated recruitment."
Etzel couldn't stop her frown this time. The Astra Militarum routinely consolidated understrength regiments, blending human soldiery from myriad worlds. Cultural barriers aside, it had always been her belief that forging such alloys made those regiments stronger. There was no dilution here. They were not untrained youths dragging down a veteran force. They were survivors, warriors of countless battles and regiments. Them coming together was strength, not weakness. Brezhik was talking blithely on, running through squadron composition as though he hadn't just insulted a good third of the officers sat before him.
"And 4th Squadron comprises entirely Lehman Russ demolishers. 4th Squadron officers, you report to First Lieutenant Askarov aboard Brigand. Now, some of you have served under me since before we invaded this Grox turd of a planet. I know you. I trust you. We have fought shoulder by shoulder for worthier worlds than this. For the rest of you, the Emperor, in his beneficence, has furnished you with an opportunity to prove that you belong in those uniforms.
Brezhik paused in his address to stab at the holotable controls. Glowing lines flickered above the device, stubbornly refusing to resolve. The captain scowled, muttered something that could have been a prayer or oath, then tried again. The projection resolved into a holomap. It had been set to display vertically, as though the map were pasted to the wall behind it. Etzel saw the Mandraiga line glowing gold, a little way above the jagged coastline. It made for uncomfortable viewing. She hadn't realized how close their backs were to the wall. The rest of the map showed a sprawling region of mangrove swamps, watercourses, lakes, and ruined industrial sprawl, rising into drier uplands further north. Blue lines cut across it, indicating transit ways still deemed navigable. The outthrust foothills of mountains lined the top of the display. Near the foot of the largest peak glowed a blood-red skull rune.
Regimental consolidation and reinforcement has been the final step in the preparations for Operation Jotun, Brezhik continued. After extensive reconnaissance and no small loss of Cadian and Geskan lives, it has been determined the enemy's base of operations in this region is the former temple of Saint Carthusis, amongst the foothills of Mount Auric.
The red skull pulsed at these words. High Gothic script flickered to life above it.
This is the nerve centre for those traitor elements that have harassed us ever since the retreat from Ruga. Moreover, it is the base of operations for our turncoat former comrades from the 445th Vostok and the 664th Lothar Armoured.
Vengeful muttering passed like a breeze through the assembled officers.
Spine backs, leering skulls, traitorous bastards! My sentiments exactly, barked Brezhik. That would make the temple target enough. Knocking it out allows us to regroup and push northwest to break the siege of Hive Yorag. However, through psychic augury, we have learned more. The site you see before you is believed to be the current stronghold of the so-called heretic king Baragor.
This drew oaths from the assembled officers.
Quiet in the ranks,
rumbled First Sergeant Moss. Baragor the Butcher, Baragor the Corrupter. The heretic's warlord had other, less complimentary names amongst the Imperial soldiery. But to his followers, he was Baragor the Divine, their king and unquestionable master.
You have doubtless heard enough horror stories about this heretic, said Brezhik. Would that we had as much hard intelligence as we did baseless rumour. No eyewitness has lived to provide credible report on his nature. The facts we do possess are these, and by the throne they are enough. Baragor is the figurehead and mastermind of the heretical war effort on mainland Croatoas. He is a traitor warlord and possible witch. He is also within striking distance and as mortal as you or I. Strategos claim, however, that Baragor himself appears unaware of this last point. They believe that if we offer him sufficient challenge, he will come forth in person to fight. Only through cult of personality do these heretics keep a leash on their treacherous followers. Operation Jotun aims to push on Baragor's position, tempt him to battle, and secure his demise.
Etzel thought again of Yarrow Canyon, and hoped that it would be as easy as Brezhik made it sound.
With their master slain, the lesser heretic warlords will fall upon one another in the hopes of securing his vacant throne. While they are shooting one another, they will not be shooting us. And that, soldiers of the Emperor, is when 9th Group will consolidate our strength sufficient to put our fist all the way down the enemy's traitorous throat. I do not overstate matters when I say that the outcome of this operation may secure victory in the entire South Peninsula Theatre.
Some of Brezhik's audience could not restrain themselves at this thought.
Emperor, be praised! We shall be the instruments of his vengeance. Slay the heretic filth!
I don't care how formidable he is. Let's see what's left of their king after he takes the demolisher shell to the face.
This last came from First Lieutenant Askaroff and elicited a few grim chuckles. Etzel had the sense she would get on with her direct commanding officer, at least. Brezhik and Moss let the oaths die away. When silence had returned, Brezhik began running through the mission briefing and operational codes, whose details took up the rest of the data parchment. Etzel paid attention with half her mind, as the glowing arrows scored the map and runes flared to indicate company-level routes of advance, suspected enemy strengths, staging and regrouping points, and so on. The rest of her was back amidst the fires of Yarrow Canyon, feeling Commander Mazenwe's blood splashing hot across her face. Silently, she vowed to him that she wouldn't waste her chance. Not a troubled crew, not legions of heretics, not the damned dark gods of scripture themselves would stay her hand. Hatred and faith had already fueled her. Now Etzel had the chance for vengeance, too.
Thank you, God Emperor, she said, staring down at the parchment in her hands. That is plenty.
Chapter 4. Into the Dark. Fire. The tank was awash with fire. Sweat, or maybe blood, stung her eyes and bleared her vision. Hissing with frustration, she tried to wipe it away. Mazenwe's ruined corpse screamed as it burned. The enemy were outside, beating fists against the hull, making everything shake. Etzel felt the crush of them, the heaving mass of flesh and muscle and bulging eyes bunched around the tank like a fist. She felt the flames as though they leapt inside her chest. The agony was unbearable.
Please,
she gasped, and embers spewed from her mouth. She felt the fire building inside her like a volcanic eruption. She heard the tank's hull groan as the pressure became insurmountable.
I know you'll make us proud.
Etzel jolted awake and banged her head on Steel Tread's turret ring. The stab of pain chased away the last traces of the nightmare. She clenched and unclenched her tingling palms. She'd fallen asleep in the commander's seat, she realized, immersed in the roar of the demolisher's power plant. She smelled the tang of promethium fumes that no air exchanger shrine could ever wholly remove, and felt the omnipresent vibration of an armored vehicle in motion. Oathkeeper had shuddered a little quicker, but rattled the stowage lockers a little less. It was just another adjustment. For all the vehicle's unfamiliarity, being ensconced within a moving tank had been enough to lull Etzel's exhausted mind into sleep. She glanced at her wrist chrono and found she'd been out for a handful of minutes. It was worse than not sleeping at all, raindrops to the tongue of a castaway with an empty canteen. Her head was stuffed with wool. Her limbs felt heavy. Most patterns of Lehman Russ had two seats for their commanders, one in the cupola of the tank's turret and the other a little lower, placed above and behind the drivers' and gunners' stations. The former existed to allow a commander to sit in the turret hatch, eyeballing the terrain or employing their vehicle's pintle-mounted weaponry. Upon first entering Steel Tread, Etzel had been surprised to find the Agamemnon Pattern's turret seat was actually a pair of flak weave and plasteel stirrups that allowed one to stand proud of the turret from the waist upward. To her relief, the lower commander's seat had proved more familiar in its design. That said, Etzel had to consciously stop herself from clambering on down to the gunner station. The seat placed her in full view of her crew and they of her, connected and exposed.
She rubbed thumb and forefinger briskly into her eyes, then shot a look down at her new crew. Isaac Treves sat straight-backed at his controls, silhouetted by the glow of his vidscreens. His shoulders twitched as he made slight adjustments to his steering levers. The driver radiated a sense of upright efficiency, which made Sergeant Vaslav slouch, look as though someone had poured him into his seat. Her sponts and gunners would be sitting on their own small fold-out seats slightly behind and below her. Vero on the left, Schallenbohr right. Loder Moretzen would be further back still, near the power plant and ammunition stores. There was no subtle way to crane around and check on the three of them. Instead, she thumbed the activation rune on the Vox speaker set next to her seat. No headsets in this mark of the tank. For all its advanced vid feeds and data outputs, just lean-in and talk units slaved to earbeads. "Crew, full sound off and status," she said, speaking loudly into the Vox pickup. There was a static-laden pause. Etzel was just wondering if she needed to speak louder when Vaslav replied. His voice was tinny in her earbead, but not so distorted that she couldn't detect his tone.
"Confirm, sir. Are you requesting crew station readiness report?"
Etzel cursed silently. Embarrassment prickled her skin. Her groggy brain had provided the Sagoan phrasing for her order, not the Cadian.
"Confirmed, Sergeant."
Another pause. Etzel scowled.
"Crew station readiness report,"
she snapped, thinking that she and Vaslav would be having words when they had some privacy.
"Driver Treve, station green,"
Treve began.
"We're 4.3 miles from Waypoint Tertius, sir. Moved off 6 a few minutes ago, and ahead steady over marshy ground. We've left the worst of the tidal terrain behind. Steel Tread's feeling a little sluggish, but by the God Emperor's blessings, she's always like this until offered a proper challenge. Loder Moretzen, station green."
Moretzen took up the refrain.
"Confirming ammunition stores at 45 shells, primary load, 6 power packs for las cannon, and 4 reloads for each sponson gun. Just to advise the commander that we are down by 2 reserve fuel drums, which puts us at 2/3 recommended operational reserve."
"Moretzen, I already told you the matter's in hand," Vaslav cut in.
"See that it is, Sergeant," said Etzel. "In future, I expect to be apprised of any operational deficiency before we're in the field."
"Sir, Cadian protocol is that the commander isn't to be bothered with such matters unless they bear directly upon immediate operations," Vaslav replied. "And do you believe our fuel reserves irrelevant to immediate operations, Sergeant?"
"Provided they're replenished in good time, sir, I don't."
"Assume until advised otherwise that I do," she overrode him. "Sagoans are trained that omissions can kill."
"Very good, sir," said Vaslav tonelessly. "Gunner Vaslav, station green. We're maintaining formation with 4th Squadron. 100-foot regulation advanced spacing and close visibility. Cadian and Geskan infantry assets maintaining pace and dispersal. Still no live targets."
"Sponson Gunner Vero, station Amber," said Vero from below. "One vidscreen spirit disquieted, but I'll minister to it at the next halt, sir. Otherwise gun spirits roused and wrathful."
"Sponson Gunner Schallenbohr, station green," said Schallenbohr. "Awake to all threats down here, sir."
"Maintain formation and speed. Advise me of any change," Etzel said, settling now into the Cadian form of command.
"The Emperor protects," she added, and they chorused it back.
She sighed wearily after taking her finger from the Vox key. As she had 1,000 times in the past week, Etzel found herself missing Misenwe. The commander had observed a tradition at the beginning of each new mission. It stemmed from the old Sagoan custom of standing in the Emperor's sight to beseech good fortune upon commencing a voyage. She straightened in her seat at the thought. Cadians be damned. She would do this part as a Sagoan.
She owed Mazenwe that much. Etzel reached up to the turret wheel and spun it, releasing the locking bolts. Braving the unfamiliar stirrups, she pushed the hatch open and stood tall in the cupola. The cold of early evening hit her. She took a deep lungful of air. It stank of stagnant water, rotting vegetation and carrion. Even so, Etzel felt refreshed by it. Out here, the roar of the tank was louder, accompanied by the clattering song of its tracks and the wet hiss of muddy ground churned beneath them. Still, steel treads' clamour was almost lost amidst the greater thunder of the Imperial advance. Dozens of tanks ploughed through the marshes, power plants snarling as they ground over tangled undergrowth and drowned ferrocrete. Those closest bore the heraldry of 4th Squadron. Around the tanks came masses of Cadian infantry. They slogged through the mire at double time with expressions of grim resolve. Even where rancid muck rose to their thighs or bloated corpses bobbed about them. The luckiest troopers rode aboard Chimera and Torok's personnel carriers. Looking back, Etzel could see the second wave following perhaps a mile behind. Mobile artillery dotted this second line. Long-snouted basilisks, wyvern mortar tanks, rakish hydras with their flak barrels tilted skyward. The Imperial advance flowed around blackened trees and wreckage. They dominated the wilderness with numbers and determined human purpose. It stirred Etzel's heart to be part of such a vast undertaking. Remembering her ritual, Etzel turned her eyes upward. The sky was bruised in shades of apricot and purple by the sinking sun, clouds straggling grey and gold across it. Almighty God Emperor, we ask that you watch over our travails, she prayed. As we venture from safety into peril, from harbour to open waves, we ask you to bless us with your benevolent protection and lend us strength that we might return at last to safe harbour. She thought for a moment, then added, and watch over the soul of Eli Mazenwe, God Emperor. He was one of your best. Etzel's breath hitched at the last word. She closed her eyes and gripped the edge of the cupola, breathing steadily until the tightness in her throat and chest eased, saving it for when it was her and the God Emperor, just as he'd taught her. She let out her breath in a rush, blinking hard as she returned her gaze to the swamplands. It wouldn't be safe to look skyward much longer. Already the first stars speckled the firmament, and with them came the leprous glimmer of the rift. More stars glowed closer at hand, more welcome in nature. Geskan scouts moved ahead of the main advance, their pillion riders driving guide lances into the ground to mark paths that would take the weight of tanks. It was the lumen beacons set in each lance butt Etzel saw now, paths of firefly lights. She had seen enough waterlogged craters, bogs, and snarls of wreckage since leaving the line to make her exceptionally grateful for the scouts. Here and there, the ferrocrete bones of dead buildings jutted from the ooze. She saw the glint of human bone, too. Battle had cursed this region. Sporadic but unceasing, it had left scars. The gloom yielded no signs of the foe. She felt their presence, though. Somewhere out there amidst the rack and ruin. The voxbead in her ears squawked.
Lieutenant Etzel, this is First Lieutenant Askaroff, do you receive?
Etzel almost thumbed a non-existent headset rune. Instead, she detached the vox mic from its housing inside the turret, extending it on its thick wire and speaking into it. First Lieutenant, sir, I receive.
Why are you top hatch, Etzel?
Asked the First Lieutenant.
Seen something?
Etzel glanced across to Askaroff's tank, Brigand, plying the swamp 100 feet to her right. As she watched, the demolisher slammed into a splintered tree trunk and ploughed it underneath without breaking stride.
Negative, sir. No eyes on, replied Etzel.
Static hissed expectantly.
It's something my old commander used to do, sir. I've got periscope and vid feeds inside steel tread, but I want to feel it without the tank to shield me, sir.
I want to make it real.
She left out any mention of prayer beneath an open sky. She was enough the outsider already.
Sounds as though your old commander knew what he was about, Lieutenant,
said Askarov.
He was one of the best, sir, said Etzel, with a surprised surge of gratitude.
Good, because I am too. And I only permit the best in my squadron. I expect you to live up to his reputation and to mine, Etzel.
Yes, sir, I intend to.
You've inherited a job of work from Commander Holtz, Etzel. That unit has quirks. But you'll find none sturdier in a pinch, provided there's a strong hand at the tiller. Understand?
Etzel understood all too well. Askarov knew the crew of Steel Tread, and she would see Hedaya Etzel sink or swim along with them. Etzel had always been a strong swimmer.
Clear, sir, she replied.
Smashing. Now, if you're done observing your ritual, Lieutenant, button up. There's a good woman. The Spinebacks had seen some keen, sharp shooters in their ranks, even if they have proven to be a gang of shiftless heretics. I prefer you didn't get your head shot off. Makes the job harder.
We're acquainted, sir. I've heard what happened to my predecessor.
Very good, Lieutenant. Carry on.
Yes, sir, Etzel said, and dropped back into Steel Tread, shutting the hatch with a firm clang.
2 hours later, darkness had settled like a shroud over the swamp. With it, the vid screens within Steel Tread had switched to grainy green night sight and transformed the Geskan lumens to vivid emerald smears. First Lieutenant Askarov ran half-hourly vox checks. Each time Etzel gave the same answer.
Status green, nothing to report.
Once, Lieutenant Aswald voxed through on a private channel, inquiring as to how she was enjoying the swamps. She had smilingly told him to get off the damned vox unless it was urgent, and he had offered a wholly unrepentant apology. There had been a few voxed exchanges between the crew as they went about their duties, but Etzel resisted the urge to join in. She was commander now. The rapport she had to build with these people was different to that she'd had with her previous comrades. Besides, she had no desire to micromanage. Against her expectations, her crew seemed perfectly capable of going about their duties with Cadian efficiency. Etzel instead retrieved her data slate from her stowage locker and set about reviewing protocol and operational orders. The tank's internal lumens were dim. Her tired eyes soon felt grainy, straining to read the data slate's green-on-black text. She persevered, bludgeoning her tired mind into absorbing everything, going back and starting her page again each time she realized she had stopped concentrating. She would not slip into Segoan command language again. Her gaze flicked to the vidscreens every minute or so. Her ears were alert for the call to engage over the vox. She was surprised when Schallenbohr suddenly addressed her.
So, what's the score, sir?
Score, Schallenbohr?
Like, what's the op? The job, yeah? What's the Emperor expect?
Schallenbohr, Etzel said,
you have your orders. Are you asking for further operational details?
Sir, Commander Holtz used to brief us in detail, put in Vero, sounding faintly apologetic.
You've been advised of our destination, she said. You know why we're out here, and that the Emperor expects. Is that not enough for soldiers of Cadia? Commander Holtz didn't believe so, Vaslav replied.
Etzel drummed her fingers against the side of her seat, then opened a private channel to Vaslav. Speaking freely, Sergeant, what is your opinion on the matter?
Speaking freely? I believe Commander Holtz was right. Soldiers who know a little more of what they're doing can set about their duties with greater precision and focus. Banishes the dread of the unknown, the old man used to say. I appreciate many regiments struggle with the compartmentalization of information, but Cadians can be trusted, sir.
Very well, then, said Etzel. She might have mentioned that Mzenwe had in fact briefed his crew in detail for every operation, but she found herself unwilling to do so.
Either she would sound as though she was justifying the credibility of Segoan regiments in response to Vaslav's disparagement, or else leave her crew wondering whether she didn't trust them as her old commander had trusted her. Feeling their expectant silence, she took a breath and began. The goal of Operation Jotun is to advance on Mount Uruk and in so doing draw the enemy's supreme commander into the field, whereupon we will ensure his demise and hopefully destabilize the heretic command structure in this theatre.
Baragor the Demon King, spat Treve.
Baragor the Heretic Warlord, Etzel corrected. Don't let superstition lengthen his shadow, Treve.
No, sir,
replied the driver, sounding unconvinced. Etzel pressed on. Our first objective is to reach Waypoint Sextus, which, if the advance continues on schedule, we will do at approximately 0200 hours. Sextus is located in the ruins of Fort Cowl. There we will dig in for a 4-hour period while the lines redress. I intend for us to eat and sleep in shifts. Sergeant, take the opportunity to deal with our fuel shortfall.
Fort Cowl fell during the Axefall push, said Treve. It's a place of ill omen, sir.
Nonetheless, that is our objective, she replied. The advance will recommence at 0600, at which point we'll trek our way to Waypoint Quarterus in the Costmaris Manufacturum Sprawl. That'll be our consolidation point, before we push on further to the Orphide Habbelt.
That will put us a day's march from the foothills of Mount Uruk, said Vaslav.
And then we get to turn that duct squirmer Baragor into a bloodstain, yeah? I doubt we shall advance as far as Mount Uruk, mused Vero.
Why so? Asked Etzel.
She knew the answer, but wanted to see how sharp the lad on the sponson gun was.
Each muster point is somewhere we can easily fortify, said Vero. Besides which, this is a combined advance. The foot sloggers are setting the pace.
If command wanted us to surprise the enemy, we'd have been going in spearhead along the transit ways, full speed armor charge, and hope to the throne we get there before Baragor could muster his response. Or, even more likely, in that case, why wouldn't they just have called in the Imperial Navy to bomb his stronghold to rubble, then rain glory boys onto the remains?
Just so, and doubtless command have their reasons for doing neither, said Etzel.
As you have established, Vero, there's no effort at surprise here. If I had to guess, group command don't want to spook the enemy into retreat. She didn't voice the other possibility, that they didn't have sufficient air power or fast assault assets left.
Lure him out, but make him come to us while we're dug into one of those defensible muster points, said Maretzin.
Break him on the wall, said Shalimbor.
Knowing our luck, they'll hit us when we're as far between musters as they can, commented Vaslav.
It's the Geskan's job to see they don't, Sergeant. We can trust them. Etzel was annoyed with Vaslav for souring the mood, even if she didn't completely disagree.
Heretics can have a go wherever they like. Ain't going to matter, spat Shalimbor. Tread's ready for them, aren't ya, girl?
She'll reap her toll, agreed Vero.
She'll need to. If we're going after Baragor himself, Vaslav persisted, it'll be like Khazra Kraf out there.
You are aware, sir, that there have been famous battles fought upon worlds other than Cadia.
Etzel knew she should reprimand Tree for impertinence to a superior officer, but leave it to Vaslav to make a reference only the Cadians would understand. Before she could intercede, First Lieutenant Askarov's voice crackled through her earbead.
Squadron to combat ready. Geskans report malfeasance ahead.
Crew to high alert. Rouse weapon spirits and stand to, barked Etzel.
Vaslav bent at once to his scope, Treve to his instruments. A massive shell swung past, almost close enough to nudge Etzel's leg. Held aloft by a rattling chainsling and Loda Moretzen's augmetic strength. With her free hand, the Cadian spun the wheel on the demolisher cannon's breech. As it swung wide, she rattled the shell forward into place. She wrapped her metal fist thrice against the hull, a signal audible over the Russ's power plant. Vaslav raised a clenched fist to acknowledge Lodin, while Muretzin faded back. Etzel frowned at her grainy green vidscreens as she sought some sign of the foe. The terrain was the same morass of swamp and ruin. There'd been no report of direct contact over the Vox, nor any of the diabolical manifestations Etzel assumed would herald empiric malfeasance. Her heart thumped at the base of her throat. She stared at her screens as though she could will them to reveal the enemy by intensity alone.
"Dead ahead," barked Treve. "What in Throne's name is it?"
Etzel saw a strange mound emerging from the gloom ahead. It rose higher than the top of Steel Tread's turret. Its silhouette was jumbled, but its shape reminded Etzel of the witch-burning pyres that had dominated the square of her hometown every Ascension Day. Through the night sight filters, smudged, green Geskan figures skirted around it aboard their quads. She could read their agitation in their body language. Their wide eyes glinted like green coins.
"It's bodies!"
As they drew level with the foreboding shape, Etzel realized Vaslav was right. She saw an attenuated pyramid of corpses, all facing inward. They looked as though they had perished in the act of clambering atop one another. Rigor mortis had frozen some, seemingly reaching for an unknown prize.
"Cause of death's no mystery," Vero observed, sounding horrified. Long metal spikes burst from the corpses' backs, their torsos, their necks, as though the climbers had impaled themselves and their fellows alike with heedless abandon.
"How hard do you have to be shoved onto a spike to get impaled like that?" asked Muretzin.
Another metal spear, longer than the rest, rose from the top of the ghastly corpse mound. Atop it was a warped sigil, a disc from which jutted a flowing protrusion. Two half-moon curves bisected it, one larger, one smaller, each curving away from the other. At the sight of it, Etzel felt light-headed. Her skin crawled with sweat.
"Do not look at the sigil," she snapped into the Vox,
tearing her eyes away from the awful sight. She felt Steel Tread swerve.
"Driver, Treve, do not look at it!"
Treve gave a start as though jolted awake. He wrenched his steering levers and brought the tank back on course. They passed the carrion mound scant feet to its right.
"Tell me those aren't Cadian soldiers," said Vaslav.
"They aren't," replied Vero. "I got a good look at their uniforms as we passed. Emperor helped me. Those were Vostok."
"Spinebacks? We just passed a bunch of dead spinebacks," asked Shalimbor. "What scragged them?"
"The God Emperor gives us clear sight, and we must trust its evidence," intoned Treve.
"You all know what you saw. It is cowardice to pretend otherwise."
"The heretics did it to themselves," said Vero. "They just clambered on top of one another and all impaled themselves."
"Why?" asked Shalimbor. "It doesn't matter why," snapped Etzel.
"The ways of the heretics are insanity, and the less we understand, the better. We are in enemy territory, and we were ordered to high alert. Eyes on your screens and minds on the task." "Our armor is ignorance, our shield denial," quoted Treve.
"But, sir, we should flagellate, that we might ward ourselves against this fell omen. We ought to offer our pain to him on the throne."
"Treve, if you want to offer prayers for the Emperor's protection, I wholeheartedly endorse it. But now is not the time to halt our tank and engage in blood offerings. Maintain heading and combat effectiveness."
"Sir, no, Treve," Etzel ordered. "This is not Brethia. We are Cadians, all of us, and we will act accordingly."
Vaslav's shoulders stiffened as much as Treve's. Etzel tried not to take his silence as mutinous. If any of her crew offered prayers to the Emperor after their grisly encounter, they did so privately, hidden from Etzel's hearing by the gruff base of Steel Tread's power plant. Yet as a second charnel pyramid loomed in the distance, and then a third,
she muttered one of her own.
Chapter 5 Contact. By an hour after dawn, Etzel had sunk into an exhausted trance. She snapped back to wakefulness as the clipped tones of First Lieutenant Askarov filled her earbead.
Squadron commanders, we're getting word of contact ahead. No corpse piles this time. It's the real thing. They're hitting our skirmish screen hard.
The muster at Fort Cowl had passed in an uninspiring jumble of overgrown ruins swallowed by darkness. There had at least been time for rations and brief sleep shifts. Etzel had taken on some fuel, which was more than could be said for steel tread. Thanks to a heavy hauler bogged down in a submerged trench, the logistical support train hadn't caught up to the front line by the time they had rolled out again. Thus, Vaslav's increasingly frustrating quest to fulfill the tank's logistical shortfall had come to naught. Etzel had added this to the laundry list of lapses to discuss with him when the opportunity arose. She'd been rehearsing that conversation in her head when Askarov's call came through.
Frontline in our sector's been ordered forward to engage, said Askarov. Captain Brezhik wants 3rd and 4th squadrons on this. Plan is to hit the enemy hard and pull them into a stand-up fight. Try to drag in more reinforcements. Captain didn't say as much, but it's my guess command want to escalate from this point. Feather in their caps if they can get the head heretic to throw in here and now, without a lot of fiddling about. What's the plan, sir?
Asked Lieutenant Jorgens of Ogre.
Geskins are pinned down in a rubble field beyond a line of enemy-held bastions. Heretics ambushed them once they'd passed the structures, then surrounded them. Someone's getting hauled up for not checking those towers properly,
commented Lieutenant Svek, commander of Consequences of Folly.
Geskin orders were to runemark possible strong points for aggressive probe by Cadian frontlines, then bypass them in the interest of expediency,
said Askarov.
All the same, Svek, you're likely right. 3rd Squadron are to act as armoured spearhead for a column of 832 Chimeras. They'll flank out through Sector 341, circle around the bastions, and relieve the Geskins before they get overwhelmed. For our part, we've got infantry support from every 832 platoon in this sector, and artillery from reserves.
Target, sir? Asked Etzel.
Bastions, Etzel. And I should make it clear I expect nothing less than gratuitous property damage. Captain wants those towers reduced to rubble and the heretics thoroughly purged.
Yes, sir, chorused Etzel, Jorgens and Svek.
Be advised also, Psykhana divisions are prophesizing empiric turbulence,
added Askarov.
Eclipse on its way in, sir?
Asked Jorgens.
You know which is Jorgens, nothing certain. And we've been asked to cascade the warnings to all crews. Keep one eye on the skies through daylight hours, ladies and gentlemen, in case the Emperor seeks to test our mettle.
Etzel glanced at her vidfeeds. The dawn sky stretched like jaundiced yellow glass over the endless swamps. Sepia scuds of cloud stained it, edged with silver and coiling in patterns that seemed disinclined to obey the prevailing wind. She'd been on Croatoas long enough to recognize the signs of an impending eclipse storm. To her mind, the rift had more to do with such unnatural phenomena than the Emperor.
You have your orders, squadron. Who are you?
The question threw Etzel. Jorgens and Svek evidently knew what was expected of them as they both barked,
Hammers! And what do you do? Crush heretics! Smash in! Advance combat speed and make ready for a brawl. For Cadia and the Emperor!
With that, Askarov cut the link, and tactical data began to scroll over Steel Tread's readout displays. Jittery tension tried to crawl up from Etzel's gut. She recalled dark figures, close canyon walls, blood. Worry what is, let the rest go, she told herself. She had her tank, her crew, and her orders. What more could the Emperor provide? Etzel keyed the crew vox. Geskin forces engaging up ahead and getting the worst of it. The rune on your Auspex map shows a line of enemy-held fortifications cutting us off from them.
3rd Squadron are escorting Armored Fists in a right hook through Sector 341 to relieve the trench runners. We're rolling up with the infantry to knock out those towers. Crew to high alert. Rouse weapon spirits and stand to. Maintain advanced speed, Driver Treve. Around them, the ponderous Astra Militarum war machine dragged its feet from the mud. Infantry formations picked up their pace. Cadian soldiers, doubtless cold, wet, leech-bitten and fatigued, nonetheless broke into a jog at their officers' orders. Etzel shook her head in admiration. To right and left, Brigand, Ogre and Consequences of Folly accelerated to combat speed. Demolishers were not swift beasts, but all the same they pulled ahead. Black